Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 259. Jeff Lord, Ken Jack, Trill Bonds. Fun, weird show for you today. We are going to be reviewing two Netflix movies, two 2020 movies. How about that?
Two in one. Very rare for us.
Yeah, we're gonna do The Lovebirds, the sort of follow-up to The Big Sick.
I mean, Kumail's in it, yes.
Michael Showalter.
Stuber was technically the follow-up to Big Sick.
And then The Wrong Missy. I'm just not going to say anything about that movie yet.
I kind of, you know what I'm going to do when we get into The Wrong Missy? First off, hi, everybody. All aboard. That's my favorite podcast. I kind of want to just get my Netflix open and then just kind of go scene by scene just so I remember it. Because
I am absolutely fine with that. We will spend more time on The Wrong Missy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Lovebirds as a solo review, I don't think would have worked. I don't think it's that terrible. We'll get into both of them. And then we talked Serial last time. People were like, we need Serial rankings. We actually did Serial in one of our first like 20 episodes, but we never really like, I don't know. It was like kind of a half-assed one. So we're going to go
change too.
Yeah, we're going to do top 10 serials, but we're also tying it in to our fictional basketball debate, so we're going to plug the fuck out of that. So yeah, what's going on other than that, but before we get into our reviews, what's anything new we watch? And we are going to talk HBO Max. That's a new thing. But any new shows in the last 4 days you've picked up or any movies? I don't know.
Avatar Trill, give us the update.
Actually, I haven't progressed much on Avatar in the last couple of days. Well, I watched a screener of a movie you guys gave me the other night. Not like gave me, but like legally watched a screener. And so, yeah, I watched that. We'll talk about it when we can legally talk about it.
The new thing I've watched is HBO Max, but we're going to wait. That's the new thing I dabbled in. I was very excited. I'm streaming service guy has logged on, folks. I love a new streaming. I love diving in and seeing what they have.
A good streaming service.
Correct. This is not Quibi. It has its problems, but it ain't. Quibi is. I talked to someone today. We're doing a pod about this, and we're talking about Quibi alongside like Disney Plus, HBO Max, Apple TV Plus, Netflix. And I was like, and halfway through, I'm like, fucking, like jokes on us for even talking about Quibi. Like they belong in this discussion. But they don't belong in the discussion with any – like they're on the level of TikTok and Instagram TV, and you could argue that those are above Quibi. So it's like – I was like, damn. Like if anything, we're hyping up more than they should be. But that's enough about Quibi for now. But otherwise, no new shows. What am I – oh, I mean, I'm – Space Force is this weekend on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to watch. Yeah. I'll dive into Space Force.
Space Force. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for that. There's a lot of content. There's stuff. There's stuff coming out, consistently coming out. But it's stuff I want to watch, which is not always the case. I was really excited by Altered Carbon back in February. Yeah. I just never didn't do it for me, man.
Apple bought the that Scorsese Leo movie, right? Just like a couple hours ago.
The last couple hours.
Yeah, well, that's gonna be good.
What else? What else is on? Continue watching. No, man, I think that's it.
I tried Korra, and the first season is good, and then just after that, everything goes downhill. I feel like they make Aang into a deadbeat dad, and I don't like that one bit.
And there's a new Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah, thing I saw that on my Netflix. Banner.
The problem with watching that is they're not going to go deep enough for me. I've already been down that rabbit hole in terms of trying to find out as much as I can.
And nothing is disappointing as getting into a doc, and then it just a doc on a topic you like. Like imagine if the OJ doc like just covered the stuff you know.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing more disappointing when you finish it. Like even Theranos. Like if you knew stuff about Theranos, that doc wasn't all that good, except listening to her talk because she's so fascinating. Like that doc, like if you knew stuff about Theranos, like you watch that, you're like, okay, whatever. Like that's a rehash.
What about the Michael Jordan doc narrated by Elizabeth Holmes?
Oh, I love that. What's it called?
Michael is unstoppable in the paint in the fourth quarter.
But Michael's questioning of Dennis Rodman's antics really played in to the Bulls.
But that's how I felt about maybe 50% of the Michael Jordan documentary, was that it just wasn't telling me any new information. It's like, Michael Jordan was a star in the 80s, and he came into the league and he became a star. And I'm like, yep, knew that. Yep. Oh, he's got a shoe deal. Weird, never heard about those. You guys see the Ben and Jerry shoes that came out? Everybody was flipping out over.
Yeah.
If you did not go after them, I believe.
Nah, there's absolutely no chance. If I can never hit on generally shoes on sneakers, there's no way I'm even putting in. Like people are legit mad. I'm like, why? Like this is the most sought after shoe. Like out of all the shoes, you do not have a chance to get this ugly ass shoe. Fucking clown shoe. People wanted this clown shoe. They wanted it. They wanted to sell this clown shoe. But a bunch of people wanting to sell a fucking clown shoe. That was the internet this week. I was on like Nike Talk and people were like, man, I just really wanted this shoe. I have a special connection to Ben and Jerry.
What the fuck is that?
How do you have a...
you like the Jimmy Fallon pint. You buy it now and then.
Stan named him Ben.
So, like, I think sneaker culture is really interesting, and I think there's a lot of fascinating history to it, and I think there's a lot of history that's been co-opted by big brands and quote-unquote hype beasts and like resellers and shit. But the one thing I will absolutely demolish is any sort of collaboration with a major brand. To me, that is just the lamest of lame. Like a skateboarding shoe collaborating with Ben and Jerry, skateboarding shoe collaborating with 7-Eleven. You remember, you know, like KD had that Nerf thing. It's just like that people get excited about that because it's like two products I know at once. I'm in.
Kyrie now,
this
did.
Is epic.
Kyrie did like a donut one, I think, with Krispy Kreme once. I know LeBron did like Fruity Pebbles.
Somebody had a Super Soaker one that it actually was really cool. Like, it's not that they're not cool. It's just that when you talk about
that, shouldn't be the reason you buy it.
When you talk about, like, I have a special connection to sneakers, I understand that. Like, I you know, the first pair I bought with my own money was a pair of Jordan 11s back in 96. And, like, so, but yeah, like, I do, it makes me feel nostalgic. It makes me feel good. But when you're like, I have a special connection to Ben and Jerry's vis-a-vis, I need these sneakers. I'm just like, what's your, are you Jerry's grandson? Do you like the ice cream? Were you... was your life saved by a Jerry Garcia pint?
Jerry get hype maxes. The classic bit we all know and love.
Anyway, I mean, shoes are fun, but it's funny because I used to wear Dunks back in like 2006, 2007. Just go to Journeys and buy a friggin' pair of Dunks.
Oh, yeah.
And now Dunks are back in, baby. It's all cyclical. You calling me old now? Kids, just wait till I tell you when I used to wear that shit. You roll your eyes. Why are you talking to me? You're supposed to be 6 feet apart.
I've been to a Journeys or a PacSun in so long, I miss them.
Dude, have you ever been to a Tilly's?
No, what's that?
I've never been into a Tilly's. It's like a PacSun on steroids. Like the new generation of PacSuns. They're just, if you're an old, They're absolutely overwhelming. You feel like you'll set off an alarm and the FBI is going to escort you out the second you like cross the threshold.
Tilly's, you said?
It's called Tilly's, yeah. It's like a skate.
Jennifer Tilly's signature restaurant.
That's right. Jennifer Tilly, the celebrity that could get people to come to a restaurant.
Emphasis on one word in that sentence. She had a sexy voice. No one's denying.
Jeff, you never been to a Tilly's? You ever seen a Tilly's?
I know Tilly's, and this is actually funny because you guys are coming on 11 a.m. The 28th Thursday, the day this pod drops. You guys are coming on to do trivia, and writing trivia for you is very hard, Trill, because PFT knows you well, and knows that like there's questions I can't write for you because they're so obvious that I know you know them that they're layups, and like you talking about Tilly's is a good example because I have some people help me with questions and I'm like, all right, I need, cause a lot of the trivia is like brands and retail and restaurants. And like, these are nothing. These are $100 on millionaire question for Trill. So I have a challenge ahead of me. There's going to be a couple that you're just going to know. And I'm going to have, people are going to have to accept the fact that some trivia is just in your wheelhouse.
Hey man, that's fine. You know, I'll go to Tilly's. I'll stop at Charlotte Russe on the way out. It's closed, rest in peace. All the girls used to wear Charlotte Russe when I was in high school and college. Now all the girls, I don't know what the girls wear. It'd be weird if I knew what kids wear these days. That'd be weird.
I feel like the Abercrombie age died with, I think, my generation, Abercrombie and Fitch.
Love a good Abercrombie with the smell and the music.
Dude, mm-hmm. Look up Mike Jeffries, the former CEO of Abercrombie. Like,
oh, I know you're talking.
Yeah, I forget which newspaper did feature on him, but they're just talking. I mean, 60-something-year-old man who basically, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to speculate, but tried to obviously act younger because of the brand he was representing.
You know what I always thought was cool was when I'm not sure if it was them or American Eagle, like their employees would wear like the earpieces and it looked they're like the Secret Service, yes, or something. They have the lav pack and I'm like, damn, this fucking.
A lot of retail places do that, but I worked golf retail and we did it. And I was at first like that's a bummer, but then I'm like, man, I don't want that fucking thing in my ear all day listening to a bunch of bullshit retail conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Loss prevention. It's like,
but it looks so cool.
I worked retail. I worked for Express for men for a summer.
Oh no, you
actually it was a male and female tool. Yeah, I was at the I don't know if it's still there, but if you're in Carmel, if you go to Clay Terrace, there's an Express or was an Express there. I don't know how well they're doing these days, but yeah, dude, I did well, man. I like enjoyed
it. Commission?
No. I don't remember getting commission, but yeah, like I enjoyed it, man. It was like what, 2005? Like, wait, it was like high school before you're like old enough. Or college before, you know, like freshman and sophomore year of college, like some people get internships, but they're the only really smart kids that do it. It was like my freshman or sophomore year, and I just wasn't smart enough to get an internship. So I just worked a retail job.
Worked at Express, got retail experience.
Learned more about that one than, and you know what? You know what the best part about it was? Worked with a lot of women and nothing happened between any of them.
Whatsoever.
I'm a respectful professional gentleman. A
respectful king.
Is it because you couldn't fit any of the outfits there?
That's right. I was just blubbering over.
If I tried to put on anything from there, I'd muffin top out and within before it got buttoned all the way down.
I don't know, man. You'd be surprised.
I'm halfway up the fucking zipper and I'm spilling over enough to open up a fucking bakery.
Squeeze into a 1MX, baby.
So speaking of clothing, this is where you got to get your clothes because it'll fit you well and it looks great. And that's Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon, they try to make all your basics smartly designed and shopping for them very convenient, not a pain in the ass. Look, you're not going anywhere for the most part, depending where you live in the country, to buy shit anyway. So why not do it on Mack Weldon? A sweatshirt and a sweatpants. That's all I got to say. Their sweatshorts and sweatpants are to die for, especially if you're working from home now. They got much more than just underwear, but they do have great underwear. Great undershirts that look good underneath something, but also just by themselves. And then I've cleaned them out on the accessories. I got all their accessories. Got their travel kit, got their card carrier, commuter bag, got a actually, I don't have the passport bag, but I don't travel internationally, so that's why I don't have that. That's my only excuse on that. But they got great stuff. You got to go to Mack Weldon. They've been a sponsor for a while now. Again, got much more than just underwear, but they do have great underwear. Socks, shirts, undershirts, great hoodies. Zip up that hoodie. That's a good fall chic look whenever that rolls around. I'm not even using that term right. Yeah, got to go to Mack Weldon. And now Mack Weldon, they have a loyalty program called Weldon Blue. You create an account totally free. First level, you place an order for any amount, and you never pay for shipping again. Second level, once you purchase $200 worth of products or more from Mack Weldon, not only will you continue to receive free shipping, but you start saving 20% on every order you make for the next year. It also grants you access to new products before they're released to anyone, as well as free gifts added to future orders. It's fantastic. Got to go online, MackWeldon.com. For 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon, MackWeldon.com, enter promo code LIGHTS, MackWeldon.com, enter promo code LIGHTS. All right, let's start it out with HBO Max. HBO Max launched today. It's another HBO service, but it's kind of their big one. This has everything. It has much more. It's Warner Brothers' streaming platform, but they're using the HBO name because why not, right? Like
it's a name you associate with quality.
Right. Exactly. I'm not saying that Warner Brothers is poop, but if you're a turd and you pair with like a thing of fruit, you're going to call yourself whatever that fruit, like you're going to call yourself the better version.
Well, Warner Brothers has always been second place.
Right.
Yeah.
When I think about Warner Brothers, I'm like, they're the second place Disney. They even attach themselves to the second place theme park. So HBO is a good name because they're first place in what they do.
It reminds me of, I forget what brand we were talking about with this recently, with a movie doing this, maybe Call of Duty or something like that. But like even with Jumanji, for example, like just making your own movie and attaching a brand that you know people like to it just to make sure that like you get more eyes on it, which is smart.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing with...
Ooh, Elmo's got a show.
He does. Well, we'll talk about the originals. The thing with HBO Max is that it is a little confusing, the names. I believe if you have a cable subscription to HBO, you already signed up for it. You just got to log in with your cable provider. You can sign up for it on your own. If you have HBO Now, you get it as well. And HBO Go, I don't think there's any crossover there. But with HBO Now, HBO Max, you have the HBO Go services. They have a lot of things on here. They have the DC Universe, TCM. Cartoon Network, Adult Swim, Sesame Workshop, Studio Ghibli, Crunchyroll Collection, not all a Crunchyroll, Looney Tunes. They have some original things. Their originals are not all HBO, Friends, the entire Warner movie lineup. Up until yesterday, they did not have Harry Potter, even though it's a Warner thing.
They got and then the OC.
You go. All of a sudden, they had Harry Potter this morning. So they must have got it overnight. They don't have the Dark Knight yet. The Dark Knight, what's not on there yet? The Dark Knight is not on there. I'm not on there yet.
Prince.
Watchmen's not on there yet, like the Ultimate Cut of Watchmen as well. Superman Returns, Batman Begins, a lot of Superman. They're moving over. Disney Plus dealt with this as well, with Infinity War, for example, with Netflix and just previous contracts. But they're going to have a lot of future original things as well. We know Justice League, Snyder Cut, Green Lantern series, Justice League Dark series, helmed by J.J. Abrams. He's going to be behind that with the producer. As of right now, they have Love Life with Anna Kendrick and an Elmo late night talk show. That's really all they have for originals. They will
turn around. let me get a good look at you.
They will have originals. They just don't have them yet, which is a bit of...
In 2000, Elmo did something unfortunate.
He's on the notes app.
They have Flight Attendant with Kaley Cuoco, Raised by Wolves by from Ridley Scott, a Gossip Girl thing called Tokyo Vice from Ansel Elgort. They spent about $3.5 billion on content. So that's going to be up to now because it'll be their content as well as the HBO Max stuff. $15 a month. It's very expensive compared to everything else. But the IPs, again, include Big Bang Theory, all the ones I mentioned, movies. They're also doing movies that are not Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Which is a very cool thing that they've done. They're doing movies that are outside of the Warner Brothers realm, which is great. And I like that because they're trying to just make this a platform that's really based on IP right now and then expand into other territories. One big drawback, and then I'll let you guys have comments because Trill, I know it's a comment you made. Priority for them. Actually, it's funny. I have ABC on above me and Thor the Dark World's on. There's a Disney Plus ad in the bottom. I haven't seen that in a while for obvious reasons. They said a priority was getting the Harry Potter stuff yesterday. and they had it this morning. Roku and Fire Stick, they do not have yet. HBO Now was on Roku, and this is HBO Now converted, basically, but they haven't struck a deal on this because I know each side wants something different. Thoughts, though, on HBO Max? I like the layout. I like what I've seen so far. I'm glad I bought it.
I think, honestly, the big sell for me, I'm sure it's been other places, but it's nice to have a consolidation of classic movies somewhere on a streaming service. Mm-hmm. I feel like the movie selection's been not so classic, right? I feel like classic movies on Netflix is maybe something from the 80s, whereas here Casablanca's on it. Like you get the TCM has a lot of choices, like at least in their section of the catalog. So I think that's really cool because there are a lot of classic. I'm just looking at like some of the like Deliverance. I mean, maybe not in the same breath as Casablanca, but that's still a seminal movie in filmmaking history. So I think that's neat. But yeah, the only tick mark you're saying is the TV I have up in the kids' playroom here is it's a Roku TV, and there's all the episodes of Sesame Street are on this thing, and I would love to just be able to put it on the TV and start some Sesame Street up, but I can't do it yet because it doesn't support Roku for whatever legal reasons.
I think you can cast it over, probably, right? To Roku, or does Roku not support casting?
No, I could cast it over if I could find my cast dongles. But
I will add this too. Some of the stuff is collections. Like, for example, like I was like, oh, fuck, I'm going to go back and rewatch Tim and Eric Awesome Show. It's not on there yet. It's our Adult Swim collection. They have Robot Chicken, which I may rip through all the old Robot Chickens. But some of them are not full. Like, true, I don't know if you want to watch Space Ghost Coast to Coast.
Nope.
That's on there.
I mean, a lot of people have a lot of respect for that show. I have a lot of respect for it. It's never done it for me. I've never found it funny.
I think the good thing about it right now is kind of like what you're saying, Trill, in that you're getting a lot of these movies that you might not find everywhere else because they, I don't think, put enough emphasis on original programming ahead of time. So right now they're behind the curve and making up for that by buying movies that people like. And that's like a good grace period for a lot of, I think, streaming platforms before they start making all this OC, most of which probably is going to end up sucking ass.
Yeah. And I think, look, I'm in the market for this. If I look at something like Disney, I subscribe to Disney for my kid and for The Mandalorian. So yeah, I want more original content for them, but the film backlog in terms of what you can get on Disney is great for my kids. There's not much interesting stuff there, but the fact that I can go in and watch 2001 A Space Odyssey as I'm laying in bed, whereas like before Citizen Kane, if I want to just, I mean, I haven't seen Citizen Kane. That's a ground. I'm on a Rosebud movie podcast. Dude.
There but,
like,
you saw it.
That's a groundbreaking movie. And stuff like that. So I think this is like overall a very, very good thing. There's a lot of good stuff on here that makes these classics more accessible to everybody who at least subscribes to HBO Max. And the lack of, you know, original programming, I think there's so much stuff that just hasn't been on the internet or hasn't been on the internet in a way that is easy to access before that can make up for it for now. So I'm pretty
little shop of horrors.
Yeah, you know, Rick Moranis, the Moranis god.
We will review movies off HBO Max. Probably we'll give it like a week or so, let people sign up, but there are so many things on here. Tropic Thunder is on here. I've really wanted to do Tropic Thunder for a throwback. So we will do movies off this because this is a treasure trove of new stuff for us to sift through. We'll just got to let people, I mean, Alien, Citizen Kane. People want us to do really, really old. You know, we will do really old ones at some point.
Huge miss on them not making on the Looney Tunes cartoon logo, not making a big Chungus though. If they really wanted to strike on that meme, a year that died out six months ago, 15 months ago, they should have done that right there.
Big Chungus.
I think I get this with my subscriber anyway, but I still fucking paid for it. So whatever. I like what I see here. I love the movie library. It's never bothered me too much. I'm a big renter. I rent a shitload of movies on YouTube because they're cheap. A lot of them are in 4K. But you know what? Which this platform not in 4K right now, which is kind of a bummer. But a lot of what I don't know, like a lot of what HBO Max has, I'm bought in. I like it. I like the movies.
Yeah, I got the Ghibli movies in here.
Still not a great streaming platform to go for comedies yet, though, and I do believe Universal with Peacock is going to have a really good selection of
shows or movies.
Comedies, of Universal comedies, like the I Love You Mans and the Role Models of the World. That's where they're going to land. This one has like Due Date, Eight-Legged Freaks. Oh my God, the Flintstones, Viva Rock Vegas, baby. But yeah, no one really has like the go-to Apatow era stuff, but they will. Yeah, they will. So yeah, I like what we see here.
I like it too. I like streaming services. I can't wait to be conscripted into one of the streaming service armies of the future to fight the streaming wars alongside you guys. As everybody, society fractions off to support HBO Max or Disney or whatever entertainment company we decide to pledge allegiance to.
They need to give us money.
No, man. They give us content.
They start paying us as much as Disney pays us. Content, that way we can advertise for more.
Content's way more valuable than money, dude.
The problem with Quibi is they only paid us $10 an hour to talk about it that one week. So
yeah, and that was it. The campaign ended. We went back to shitting on them.
I mean the interface is okay of HBO Max. I always found it
the same thing issue I'm having with it already is the same one I already had with HBO Go, which is that like everything takes a while to load, and like on Chrome, which is already like obviously bogs down your computer. Not saying everyone's obviously not watching this on a computer, but that always frustrates me. I wish it was a little more fluid.
The fucking three dots. Three dot thing where you're like, this ain't loading. Exactly. Like I gotta refresh this browser.
Exactly.
Can't wait to go back and rewatch the stand-up comedy specials for like Amy Schumer ones. I'm just kidding. But there's a lot of good. I mean, killing them. Like, obviously, the HBO catalog of stand-up comedy specials has been something we already had access to. But there'd be a lot of fantastic ones. Like, Killing Them Softly is the one I can think of off the top.
How about all these old Godzillas?
Tons the old school old ones. Godzilla, like, I'd rather watch the Chappelle Godzilla fight.
Oh, gee, right
back to Killing Them Softly.
The one thing I do want to add, though, because again, I said I was talking about this earlier with someone, and I kind of, for the first time with Apple TV is the example, I kind of made like something clicked in my head, and the thing is why this didn't work is that you have Disney Plus and HBO Max. They're investing a lot of money in their own properties. Look at even like the Green Lantern show is going to be a shitload of money. Disney Plus own properties. Disney Plus can lean back a little easier than everyone else because no one's going to stop liking Star Wars or Marvel. Like that's just not going away anytime soon. So they can have that gap between Mando and everything else. Apple TV did something interesting to me. They bet on creators. They bet on actors and actresses and directors and producers. J.J. Abrams left the project. They bet on the Spielbergs and the Anistons and the Carells because they thought like, look, what do people do? They sit on Netflix and they watch The Office and Friends until their fucking eyes bleed out. And so like we have Rachel Green, we have Michael Scott in a show, baby, let's go. But the problem was there wasn't Michael Scott and Rachel Green. It was the weird Matt Lauer, like based on a true story, Matt Lauer show with Steve Carell playing himself. And I think that they did that with a lot of people. They're like, we got Jason Momoa, but it's like, yeah, but he's not Game of Thrones and he's not Aquaman.
Even like, if it was Aquaman, I don't even know if it would draw.
Yeah, but this is not the guy. Like it just, they had a bunch of people we recognize and they marketed that as their thing, but they were doing not the thing that people like them doing. I'm not saying that's all they should ever do with their roles, but when that's how you market it and you market it to a mass audience, like I don't know. That's why I think that's a big reason why it didn't work.
It was a mindset. I feel like it's an older mindset where it's very 90s to me, where so much is based around the star. And you're right. Mm-hmm. Things have shifted to where when you think about like the Michael Schur's, you know, what he's done for NBC just in terms of his projects. It's like, you know, now your name that you want like attached to whatever platform you're distributing is like a Shonda Rhimes. Or somebody who's been shown to produce hit after hit after hit, regardless who the stars are. Because, I mean, that person, the Tyler Perry or whatever, they'll bring the right people into the project. They just that's the creative engine behind what you need rather than kind of the other way around, just getting recognizable faces. That's what we used to do in the 90s. So we got another action movie, just throw Van Damme in it. Some people will show up. Fuck it.
Mm-hmm. The older marketing heads, just, they kind of view it almost like the Elf spaghetti scene, where just like, oh, well, if I put syrup, a thing I like, in spaghetti, a thing I like, it'll definitely taste good. They're just like, if I combine Steve Carell and or Michael Scott and Rachel Green, it will definitely turn out good. But like, when you don't have that substance behind it, and like anything besides really that to work with, then you're never going to have an audience that I think buys into it. And like, long term, like,
off the bat, sure, you'll have people, right?
You'll have people off the bat for sure. Like, at least
I'm agreeing. I'm saying I don't think that's an off the bat move. I think Netflix, if Space Force is good, that's what people like. Fair enough to Steve Carell, because Steve Carell's a really good actor and he's done really great roles in dramas. But Steve Carell, the people who they're like, when they're trying to make their money, they're going to that demo that's watching The Office right now. So Netflix makes a great place spending a shitload of money to put Steve Carell in a show that's like The Office. And then you have that trust. Then you throw him in the drama. I think the play off the bat was just, it was a tough play from Apple TV+.
There's no substance behind it. It was like a hollow thing, I think, and they thought that as long as they grip people in there in that first season, then they can just do whatever they want and like work on it for a second season. Who cares? Like, we have right now, we have, you know, Steve Carell and Jennifer Aniston both saying yes to come and do a show for us. We don't give a shit what it is. We're getting these two people in this show. And, like, it doesn't matter because people are going to watch it. That's the wrong mindset.
Yeah, and I think people can emulate how prestige TV looks and feels.
Mm-hmm.
That whole show had a very prestige TV corpse type feel to it without any actual life in it. That's what they're going for there. They're like, okay, like, what is a show on HBO look and feel and sound like? And it's kind of like this. It's like, well, can we take somebody who's in a comedy show and put them in here, and it's serious subject matter, it's all this stuff, but I don't know, maybe you didn't have the right people producing it. And again, I think that's the way it is, because I feel like the conversations that people like to have around their content these days are, I mean, a lot of it's about the content itself. But go back to like Game of Thrones. Like, a lot of the discussion was around D&D. Even before people started hating them real hardcore, is like, how are they going to wrap it up? What's their process? How many seasons they have left? Like, whatever. Like, even stuff like with Barstool, it's like nobody's really like, if they talk about us as a podcast, like, it'll be a little bit, like, maybe it'll be on our Reddit. Nobody really wants to talk about like what we talked about. But like, you know, if you guys don't wear the right thing to the Duncan Awards, like, it's the behind the scenes stuff that like you kind of feel like you're part of, that I think people like being brought to the table with. And I think when you get a content creator that you can follow from place to place, you kind of feel like, since you're a fan of them, you're somewhat invested in the process too, and that you're a part of it.
Yeah, exactly. Nailed it.
Right. Yep. Yep. Nah, that's a good discussion. Well said. It's interesting looking back on it. I know we talk about stream platforms all the time. I'm just kind of fascinated by them. This whole movement is kind of insane. And no one really, it's funny because, like, they're all trying to win. No one's going to win. We're all going to use all of them. It's like, comes down to who's going to have the most, I guess. But no one's going to be, like, the go-to. Like, they're just going to – people are going to be on multiple ones. Is how it's going to be.
It's people have been calling it since day one, because like the cord cutting was going to lead to this inevitability refracturing of this, you know, delivery mechanism. So now you get to a point to where you want to watch all these things, you're paying as much as cable. I'm sure like a lot of people figure out how to do it a smart way. Disney's not that much, Hulu has a package or whatever. But we talk about that all the time on the streaming. I think the interesting part of like this whole streaming discussion right now is, it means a lot. It means, I think, dominance means something different now post COVID-19 than it did pre COVID-19, with what we've seen with like movie distribution and everything, and kind of what maybe they're going to do with some smaller name movies coming up. You know, if a studio like Warner Brothers, you know, do they use a release that they have? Do they put it on HBO Max rather than putting it on demand to try to drive people to their subscription service? Or do they just make more money selling it for $20. I don't know what that's going to do, but it certainly would be a nice little like ace in the hole to put like a movie that was going to go to theaters, but maybe wouldn't make financial sense the next year to do it on one of these services, which Disney's doing, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like a new thought, but I just would be interested to see like if Disney can afford to do it. So who knows?
Yep. Yep. Let's move on now. We'll move on from streaming platforms. We were supposed to launch a bunch of Americans into space today. That didn't happen yet. It got delayed. But we are going to launch Tom Cruise into space at some point. He is going to be doing a movie working alongside Elon Musk, SpaceX program, trying to do a movie in space. And the director is going to be Doug Liman, who did Live, Die, Repeat, a.k.a. Edge of Tomorrow, a.k.a. Edge of Tomorrow, Live, Die, Repeat. It has like 100 names. He directed Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Jumper, The Bourne Identity, the Wall, which came out 2 years ago, I believe.
Remember, because we did Best Wall for the Oscars.
As well as American Made. and he's a movie next to Chaos Walking. But that one's with Tom Holland, I believe. And Daisy Ridley. Yep. I feel like that one's never coming out. And apparently Live, Die, Repeat again. However, he's going to be doing this space movie with Tom Cruise. I'm excited for Tom Cruise space. But I'm worried, though. I mean, this would be his craziest stunt yet. It's in space.
You're worried? Why? Like, you're worried about safety or you're worried about the movie?
Worried about Tom Cruise's
safety.
Tom Cruise's safety. Like, the elements. And I just want, maybe it's because I just watched The Martian.
You don't want to see Tom Cruise burn up on reentry?
Dude, we fucking, every single SpaceX like clip we watch is always, and this is not fair to SpaceX, but at the same time, every single SpaceX clip you ever see on the news is just the rockets exploding on the launch pad, which is like, want to see that for Cruise.
I thought they landed a rocket like a couple months ago.
No, they did. That's what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying. It's not fair to SpaceX.
It's not fair, though,
but the videos you always see circulating are all the rockets exploding, which is like,
you better not go up there in the fucking Tesla truck.
Yeah, exactly.
Cybertruck. Remember when everybody's talking about the Cybertruck?
That was objectively hilarious.
2014, right?
When they threw that ball at that window and it just broke, that was just objectively very funny.
Yeah, dude, if it was anyone other than Tom Cruise doing this, I'd be disappointed. Right. Because I'd be like, why isn't it Tom Cruise? It makes sense.
I agree with you, Trill. I think that the big thing here with Liman is that, like, he obviously, I think, has a really good taste for sci-fi, right? Like, I think especially when you look at Edge of Tomorrow, just like, I think he curated that vibe really well. But like, I don't even know how you get a director, like how they're going to film this. Are they going to shoot him into space with like one cameraman and just be like relaying directions back and forth from Earth? Are they going to send the Doug Liman up into space with him? Like, I don't know functionally how this is going to work, but I think he's a good choice. You just need to make sure you get the right type of like cinematographer, the right type of like all this shit to make sure it works correctly, because, you know, if this is going to be a huge investment, right? Not only just for the, whatever studio is behind it, but also like SpaceX and NASA are both involved in it. They're going to want to make sure this is good. I'm sure they're going to have like an unfortunate, maybe like hopefully not too much of a creative hand in it, because this is going to like, I think, have a big impact in the future on like public opinion as far as spaceflight goes, and like especially like private spaceflight. Like, this movie bombs,
it could be propaganda.
Influence it. Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of. Is like, this is going to be a once in a lifetime opportunity, especially for us as audience members, to see Cruise do something like this. And I just hope it doesn't turn into like a fucking camel run by NASA and SpaceX, or like something that just ends up being a flop, because it really is like, you don't get an opportunity like this every now and then, really.
Yeah, I don't know, man. That's a good point. I don't know what's, like, when it comes to space, I don't know what's actually propaganda, what's not, because NASA ruled. Like, going to space was really cool. NASA logo was sick. I loved that as a kid. I'd like to get back to that. I think that was neat. But now that it's like, I mean, there's always been intertwined with companies because you've always had contractors and stuff. But now it's like SpaceX, obviously very publicly facing. Maybe not in terms of the corporate structure, but just in terms of their leadership. I don't know much about it. But it's definitely going to be an event. It's going to be one of those things where there's going to be a lot of like obvious like documentary type materials around the production of it too. They'll probably be a lot more interesting in the movie themselves.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, we had to send like three other guys to space that were the crew, and they fucking just sat around all the time. And
oh, they sent crew to space with him from your 5-on-5.
And what?
Oh, he sent crew.
Well, we get another look at crew. Mm.
We got a little breaking news here about Ken Jack's guy, Henry Cavill.
Oh boy, what is it?
Comicbook.com reporting that Henry Cavill back as Superman.
Oh, for the Snyder Cut?
Just in general. In multiple DC movies.
Oh shit, that's awesome.
It's fine, yeah, whatever.
He's a good Superman.
Yeah, just stick with the good thing. You gotta get Superman. Like, don't... We don't have to do the whole cycle of getting mad about whoever plays Superman again. We've already been that through him. We've figured out he's fine. Just get somebody confident to direct it.
Get a role where it's a little more chipper of a character, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Get that happier movie smile. Mm-hmm. Have him do the mustache again. Remember the mustache thing? Remember when that was a big problem for us as a society?
Let's want to talk Avatar 2?
I do. What's going on? I mean, is Jimmy C got this figured out yet, or dude, what?
How did Cameron not get a hand in the Tom Cruise space movie? How did he not get involved?
Just, do you think Tom Cruise and Cameron get along?
No, that's like, the no. one thing where I think that'd be the only problem. But how did he not weasel his way on board?
I don't know, but I think it's one of those things where, like, Tom Cruise just Isaiah Thomas'd him off the Dream Team.
All right, so here is it. John Landau did an interview, RZN. It was about him returning to New Zealand. It's a New Zealand thing. This is what he said about this is the story of the Sully family and what one does to keep their family together. Jake Sully and Neytiri have a family in this movie. They're forced to leave their home. They go out and explore the different regions of Pandora, including spending quite a bit of time on the water, around the water, in the water. I think, why do people turn to entertainment today? More so than ever, I think it's to escape the world we're in, to escape the other pressures they have in their lives. I agree with that. I think with Avatar, we have an opportunity to allow people to escape to an incredible world with incredible characters that they will follow in much the same way as Peter Jackson was able to do with Lord of the Rings. Okay, so that's what we're looking forward to doing. I don't hate the comp. I mean, they have a long way to go to have the sentiment of Lord of the Rings. Even though they were first the big one. Look, I'm looking forward to this movie just based on the fact that it's been so fucking long. I just can't wait to see what they did. I can't wait to see why it took so long.
If we get another movie that tells us how important family is, it's a win for us. That's one lesson we haven't learned with movies is the importance of family.
Correct. Especially from James Cameron. He has never mentioned it before.
Yes.
Not once.
Didn't really get into it. Avatar. It's weird because it's been 10 years, right? It was 2010. Mm-hmm. Was it
2010? 2009. No, it's been longer.
2009.
2000. Oh, fuck. Now I'm.
No, it was nine, right? It was nine.
It was nine. Yeah, 2000.
Part of me says that if they really wanted to make it a thing, they missed the window. But the other part of me is like, I don't want to doubt James Cameron, but I'm just thinking, like, if this was something they could have filmed back to back and released two or three and, like, you know, a year stretches and got it when people are still bought in, then I think it would be like for you know, people who are maybe 12 or 13 at the time, like Ken Jack, a bigger thing for them maybe. But mm-hmm. Now it's just like James Cameron's boondoggle. And I hate to say that because obviously one of the greatest filmmakers of all time, but he does get a little too focused on some things, and maybe replicating the water is one of them. So I don't know what to think because I feel like it'll be a very competent action movie, but the other part of me is like, who's going to care? Who's going to remember it? Or, well, I mean, and I'm not saying nobody will, but I just like wonder what the reaction to Avatar 2 would be for a movie that was once the highest grossing movie of all time.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to really expect from it because, like, I don't want to say I'm not excited for it because it's like you said, Sean, it's like one of the best filmmakers of all time. I don't think Avatar, the original movie, is nearly as good, obviously, to deserve like being the second highest grossing movie of all time. But at the same time, it's definitely like an enjoyable movie to watch. You know,
it was fun. And, like, it's yeah, a fun it's movie. It's a fun
film.
It was a tech demo too, by the way.
Yes.
And that's the way I felt about it. It was a tech demo and 3D technology in the movies and was executed probably one of the better 3D movies in Avatar because it was specifically made for that.
And it kept 3D technology alive in movies for like the next like 8 years.
Then all
it died out.
Yes. Then all the other movies did it like post-production. It's like Alvin and the Chipmunks Chipwrecked in 3D. Let's just fucking make Alvin flying at the camera 3D. Just figure it out.
Figure it out, Jeff.
Yeah. By the way, that report on Cavill is from The Wrap. I need to get that right. Yeah, we got to get Avatar.
Ian Rappaport?
What?
Yeah.
Ian Rappaport?
No, the other guy. Hey, Superman, he's back, that cockeyed fuck.
Go down to Cumbie's and get some coffee.
Phoebe! I'm going to shoot this bird! He's the first guy you see on fucking Cameo every time. It's so frustrating. Yes, like, well, who wants that? Who the fuck wants a cameo from him?
Yes, it is.
You fucking asshole, here is your birthday. Look, apparently your friend hates your guts because he spent $200 for me to tell you happy birthday.
I'm just excited that Disney World's opening so we can finally go to Disney World and go to Avatar Land and get all of their awesome items, including the Pandoran Sunrise, the glowing Undelta Seed.
Is that a drink?
The floating rocks steak.
They changed a lot of names here. I think they took away the weirdo names.
Can I get the Pandoran Sunrise with Terramana, please? Never miss a chance to get a nice Terramana before I go to bed.
You can get nice the steamed Pandora pods.
Yeah, the happy
are those just bows?
They're just bows.
They're bows, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they're just bows. Yeah, they're cheeseburger bows, basically.
Ew.
What?
I don't like the sound of that.
Cheeseburger. I mean, maybe it's good when you execute it, but saying cheeseburger bow just it did something visceral to my stomach.
I had a what do you call it? So my uncle has a restaurant. He made bacon, egg, and cheese egg rolls. It was amazing. I cannot describe to you how delicious they were.
I mean, that sounds good. I fuck with the egg rolls.
Yeah, Penn State, we have a place called Ernie's Cheesesteaks. Amazing cheesesteaks, like authentic-ass cheesesteaks. And they do cheesesteak egg rolls. And they're fucking fantastic.
There'd probably be a lot of people who would argue with you that place doesn't do real cheesesteaks. Because I think there's people who argue that any place doesn't do real cheesesteaks.
Yeah, but that's a Pennsylvania place, and you have a lot of Philly people who like that place.
They still argue with it. Mm. It's not real. They don't use Crisco brand grease.
Yep. Now I'm just mad about the time I had a mac and cheese calzone from Zoni's at SUNY Cortland. Ham and cheese calzone. And a ham and cheese calzone is as bad as you imagine it is in your head.
I ate it.
Brow right now. It's gross.
I ate at DP Dough, popular college campus calzone place.
DP Dough.
DP Dough, yeah.
Double penetration dough.
Yeah. I actually talked to someone the other day about this. I can't remember what that tasted like. And I know it's just a calzone, but like college, like just pump them off the line calzone places. Just like, I think every calzone tasted the same.
Your one friend can eat it with his mouth. Your other friend can't. Devil's DP dough fry.
save these jokes for the fictional debates.
Come on, we got to take down this calzone together. Let's just don't touch each other, okay?
Last two things. Edgar Wright's Last Night in Soho, his kind of like psychological horror film, come out in April 2021. No word on the trailer, but I tweeted at him asking about the trailer, and he said, patience. So that's soon. And then, Chill, I know you're pumped about this. Girl with the Dragon Tattoo getting a TV show reboot at Amazon.
All right. Elizabeth Salander. Let's get back Elizabeth Salander there.
It's a cool name.
I actually liked the Rooney Mara one.
Was Daniel it her? Craig. Who was the other one?
It was
Claire Foy. I want to say Jones, but yeah, you're right, Claire Foy.
Rooney Mara, daughter of...
John Mara.
John Mara,
the New York Giants. Mm-hmm. Also, like... granddaughter of the other, what was it, the Rooney's family?
Sister-in-law of Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Wait, isn't she married to Joaquin Phoenix? Are you thinking Kate?
Wait, which Mara?
I think Rooney Mara is married to Joaquin, and then Kate Mara.
Oh, Kate Mara, yeah.
I don't know, one of them.
Kate is House of Cards. Rooney is...
Well, you mean Iron Man 2?
Imagine being named Kate. You're like, oh, that's a cool name, I guess. And it's like, well, here's your baby sister. Her name's Rooney. You're like, oh, it's fucking badass. I wish my name was Rooney.
I never understood that when, like,
my name's just Kate. Fuck.
Kate fuck.
All right, that's been news. Do you want to talk about movies?
Let's do it.
Yes.
The Lovebirds on Netflix. We'll talk about this one first. I think we're going to talk about this one the least. Directed by Michael Showalter, who is absolutely hilarious. Let me say that right off the bat before we talk about this movie that I thought was pretty bland. Hilarious man. Wet Hot American Summer. Then he came back for Wet Hot American Summer. He's probably the funniest character difference in between that show. He directed The Big Sick. He did a fantastic job in that. The Lovebirds was supposed to be in theaters. Got moved to Netflix. The synopsis for The Lovebirds is as follows. On the brink of breaking up, a couple gets unintentionally embroiled in a bizarre murder mystery. As they get closer to clearing their names and solving the case, they need to figure out how they and their relationship can survive the night. Stars Issa Rae, Kumail Nanjiani, Anna Camp, a couple other people you may or may not recognize. Paul Sparks, who also in House of Cards, among others.
He's in everything, man. Every time I turn on an HBO show, I'm just like, oh, there's Paul Sparks.
Yeah. movie got a 67% around tomatoes from the critics. Audience gave it a 53. I think that's probably the appropriate range, right? This movie is it's not bad.
It's disappointing though because of everybody who is involved.
Yes.
It's disappointing that this, which you would think would kind of be the follow-up to The Big Sick, just not in the same ballpark as The Big Sick whatsoever.
I do want to defend Emily V. Gordon and Kumail Nanjiani in that I think they were instrumental. Like, even though Showalter is directing and Kumail is in it, the fact that The Big Sick was written by the two people who went through it, they were able to make that what it was. So, like, this is a follow-up, but it's not like a follow-up, you know?
They didn't write the movie.
It's a paint by numbers
sophomore effort. Yeah,
it's a romantic comedy ish type thing with like funnier people than a traditional romantic comedy, and a little more edge, but still like lacking anything that makes anything like Insecure or The Big Sick or anything like Wet Hot American Summer that like people who have been involved in this before, which made that special. That makes sense.
Yeah. I feel like it's a script that did not deserve either of those actresses. Did not deserve Issa Rae, did not deserve Kumail Nanjiani. Like, I think this is probably the best version of this movie, like the best it could have possibly been. And their bones weren't there to make this movie any better than it came out being. And that's fine. Ended up giving it a 55. There's nothing wrong with that.
I gave it a 60.
Yeah, I gave it a 60. It was enjoyable, but it was also like, what's a movie? I feel like we reviewed a movie like it in a sense that stuff just keeps happening. You know what I'm saying? Like any traditional, like, and that's what I felt like Harold and Kumar was.
There were some scenes in between where it just went on a little too long. I think the fight in their apartment, it was just like, all right. I was like, I get it.
Past the comic point, yeah.
Like, this is not funny anymore. This is them just arguing. We get the character development. Let's move ahead, right? It wasn't boring. I wanted to know what happened. I was intrigued a little bit along the way, but nothing memorable. There wasn't really many moments that made me laugh out loud. A lot of the moments, and here's the other thing too. It's always tough when you watch a movie and you can tell the moments that are supposed to be the big laugh and they just aren't. Like the interrogating of the kids before they get murdered by the guy. That was supposed to be a big laugh. That whole scene just wasn't funny to me. That just didn't hit. And the other thing is too, I know for a fact I laughed out loud one or two times and I can't remember it. And I think that kind of says it all. I don't remember what it was.
It's a forgettable movie. And that's not, I don't mean to say that like all the jokes and blah, blah, blah is all forgettable. Like, this movie will be entirely wiped from my memory in like a 2 weeks time. Like, I won't remember anything from it. Like, I remember that Kumail and Issa Rae were in it and that's it.
It was entertaining. And I think expecting it to be something more was maybe just a fragment of the wishes in my mind, because I love Insecure. I think Insecure is a brilliant television show. Big Sick, you know where we feel about that movie. And it's just one of those things where you have all the right parts together, but it doesn't come together in, you know, the sum of it is obviously less than the individuals added up.
Well, you run the risk of that. You run the risk of that because when you say it is the follow-up to The Big Sick, you put that in people's head.
Did they say that? Enough. I mean, was that part of the marketing?
Yeah, it was. It was described, and I forget if it was marketing. But it was described as the follow-up to The Big Sick, so you have set that expectation. And that's not.
I don't think that's on Kumail or Issa. That's like marketer. That's marketing.
Not at all. Not at all. But like, but that's why I think it's not bad. But I can very much say I'm let down because my expectations were a little raised. And I try my best to not raise expectations for movies. I've said that before. It's like have as middle of the road expectations as possible. But you kind of get a little more amped about it at least. So excitement level at least for me. I was excited for this movie, and it just didn't. I'm trying to think of like what I even like laughed hard at. I thought the Eyes Wide Shut party was a little funny at times. Yeah, I thought them running over the guys.
Did Stuber market itself as a Big Sick follow-up or no? Because I don't think they did. And they came out like, what, 6 months after? Probably a little
Yeah, but this is the Big Sick follow-up because it's got the same director and Kumail.
Yeah.
And Kumail.
That's why I think it was called that.
Well, and it also, I mean, it also is like a, as much as you can, I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't call Big Sick a romantic comedy, but I think it probably would be described. I don't know if it's self.
It's just a good story.
Romantic dramedy.
Great story. I think this is more traditional comedy, the Lovebirds, that is. And I think that Big Sick was just more, I don't think you should try and peg it into any genre. It's just an amazing story.
Yeah, I don't love like breakup movies. Like I know it ends conveniently, and you know, it never, at no point in the movie do you think they're actually going to break up. But like, I don't like the it just depresses me. Like the breakup with Jennifer Aniston and John Favreau?
Yeah,
I just thought like I don't know.
I just don't have much depressing to say about this.
There's not much to say. It's an enjoyable movie that's really not that great, but it's not bad. It's just a mediocre movie that is probably good for a date night, but it doesn't. I don't know if I don't know like what the potential of this was, because the idea just really isn't that, you know, great to begin with, and I don't think they give anybody much to do in this movie.
Let me just say something too about this story. Not a fucking chance they didn't know that was the murderer guy driving that car. What, did he have a mask on while he was driving? They noticed when he turned around 5 minutes into the car. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
It was a small four door. It's not like he was in the front with the limo with the window up. That didn't ruin the movie for me, but I was like, all right.
I think my suspension of disbelief was pretty high for this one. I think I manned it up. I netted up a little harder than you did, Jeff. Jeff from CinemaSins here. Don't you think they would have noticed? Meanwhile, I was just sitting there like, God, I can't wait to watch the other Missy.
That's going to be the, what do you call it? What's the YouTube account that does that? Everything wrong within this account, this movie in 20 minutes? That's going to be the number one.
Are they call them the Lovebirds, but they're clearly breaking up.
They call them the Lovebirds, but they're clearly humans.
90 minutes later, it seems I was wrong.
All right, let's
seems just they have reconciled their differences.
Let's pull it up on Netflix. I just don't have much more to say about the Lovebirds, and I'm too focused on this wrong Missy movie.
The other Missy? You want me to pull the other Missy up?
Is that what I called the other day? What did I call it?
No, I just called it the other Missy because I called it
the young Missy.
Oh, that's the end of the. I make it. Hold on, I got to turn it down.
58 out of 100 average for the Lovebirds. If you need something to watch, watch it. Otherwise, you can probably skip it. It's just, I don't know. It just doesn't. I can't fuck. I just watched it. I can't remember things. The wrong Missy. We're gonna break this movie down from beginning to end. Let me say off the bat, this movie is fucking terrible.
It's awful. This movie sucks.
It is
very bad.
This is the worst movie I have watched since we started this podcast. Ooh. This is the worst movie. This is for me worse than Holmes and Watson.
Rideshare?
I don't talk about Rideshare. I don't talk about Rideshare.
You can't compare them.
Yeah, it's tough to compare. This is Happy Madison.
This is Happy Madison. This has David Spade in it, man.
This Happy Madison gives Sandler's friends a vacation in Hawaii movie was a fucking 0 out of 100. This movie, I almost DNF this movie, and I don't. I give myself 3 movies a year where if I'm watching it and I'm like, I can't do this, I turn it off and I say I'm not going to rank it. I haven't done that a lot since we started the pod because I'm like, whatever. It's like, it's my job now. This movie, I actually on first watch fast forwarded to the end. And I'm like, I just need to get this over with. Then I had to go back and rewatch when we were reviewing this. This movie from the get-go is just annoying. It's like sitting down and a Netflix intern walks into your apartment and screams in your fucking ear for the entirety of the movie, all while still finding a way to be painfully boring. This movie is a zero. There's one redeeming quality about this movie. That's Bobby Lee. He was funny.
All for two lines.
For the two lines he had, I laughed at. But when the wrong Missy comes back to the hotel or whatever. He says, oh, fuck, and he runs away. I did audibly laugh. But that's because I like Bobby Lee, and I will almost always laugh when Bobby Lee shows up on camera. That was it. This movie is so obnoxious and just annoying. And you know what? Here's and this is my last thing. I'll let you guys go. And then we'll talk. We'll break it down. We talked about this with what was that called? Fucking Dinner for Schmucks. Steve Carell's character, for me, takes me out of the movie because he's not a real person. Like, that's not a real guy. Like, there's nothing believable about that. And we just talked to Judd Apatow. And I'm not saying Judd Apatow gave a review of Dinner for Schmucks and The Wrong Missy. We talked about comedy and drama. We got really into the weeds with him on that. And he talked about, like, a comedy should serve the purpose of being a movie that can work without the comedic elements. And he's like, that even works for us, a 40-year-old virgin. Like, you can take the 40-year-old virgin very serious. It's a guy with a problem. Like, he has a life problem. It just happens to be funny. Nothing about this movie works without the fucking shitty slapstick jokes. And that's why, without the humor of, for example, Dinner for Schmucks, that movie, like, really doesn't work, because Steve Carell's character is not a human being. He's just, like, so unbelievably bizarre. Kate McKinnon's character in Ghostbusters, same thing, just not real. The Wrong Missy is not a person in this movie. What is that? Like, the opening scene in the restaurant with her going in, like, to the men's bathroom or screaming across the restaurant, the hand job on the airplane. And that's the other thing. I am okay with ripping this movie apart because we are very clearly the audience for this, at least age-wise, because the humor was directed at our age demographic. We're like heavyweights. You kind of have to go on a curve because it's not intended for us at this age. This fucking thing, I was so mad watching this movie.
That here's the weird thought I had. Well, maybe it's not that weird, but when it ended, I was like, man, Chris Farley was brilliant. and here's why. I like David Spade. I've liked David Spade in you know, his SNL personas in, you know, the clips he would do on there, and I thought he was funny. He has his own acerbic comedy, but the problem with him in a movie is he's the straight man. And in order to be a good straight man, like, you need somebody you just don't totally hate as the non-straight man, right? And that's where I thought Chris Farley was able to walk that fine line. If you think of something like Tommy Boy and you think of something like Black Sheep with David Spade, is he... that these characters were still human, even though they were ridiculous. Like, you could almost imagine, you could say, like, nobody's really like this, but I could see somebody being like this. I could see somebody being Tommy Callahan. I could see somebody being this much of a fuck up. You could not see anybody being Lauren Lapkus's Missy in this movie because it was like a horrible Kristen Wiig character from 2007. Something like that.
And Melissa McCarthy in Bridesmaids. You could see that. Ridiculous. You could see that character. You already said Tommy Boy. Tommy Boy. Ridiculous. But you're right. Like you said, yeah, I could see Tommy Boy. I'm trying to think. Christopher Mintz, McLovin. Absurd character. Or even Christopher Mintz Plot's character in Role Models. Ridiculous. But, like, you could see it.
It's rooted.
Nothing in, with her here.
You it's could rooted see. In, like, a basic level of humanity. Where the character, like... Melissa McCarthy's character in Bridesmaids was tough, but you kind of realize, like, okay, like, you know, she's been single, like, she lives on, you know, all this stuff like that, and then she has a moment of humanity at the end where you realize she's a real character. But the problem with this movie is they went from having the Missy character be a clown to trying to get us to like her in the span of a scene. Whereas, like, in something like Bridesmaids, the Melissa McCarthy character was likable throughout the whole movie, even though she was ridiculous. Like, and that's what I don't get about, like, that was the dumbest part about the other Missy, or the Wrong Missy, which I will give a 5 out of 100, just because I thought that the Sherlock and Watson was way worse.
Sherlock and Watson.
Holmes and Watson. Yeah, whatever. It is, I don't get the point. I know who this movie's for. This movie's for, like, basically 35-year-old guys who are going to become dads, like Tim the Tool Man Taylor in Home Improvement. It is for people who find the setup comedy of getting beat up by someone's husband funny, the start scene, which I feel is a trope that just needs to be retired. So you start the movie.
Nice to see Roman Reigns, though. I like him getting more into acting.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I know nothing against Roman Reigns, but just having David Spade walk in and like find a woman and think it's Melissa or whatever, and her turn around and be pregnant, like that's a joke. Like that's not really a joke. Like they meant for that to be a joke, but her being pregnant's not a joke. It's like, okay, I'll go. Well, you know, and then all of a sudden getting threatened by like a large dude, like that's like this very basic caveman comedy like level of like, oh, small man and large dude. If that guy doesn't play his cards right, he's going to get his ass kicked. Mm-hmm. That was all I got. It wasn't funny. It was just, it was bullshit. It was bullshit level humor. And it made me cringe. It gave me cringe tingles.
Mm-hmm. There, then, and then I'll let you go, Ken Jack. The other joke, which we'll get, we'll get to the jokes. We'll get to the jokes after.
All right. So yeah, I'll just start out by saying I gave it a 5 as well, Trill, because mostly because I agree with you, not as bad as I think I gave, might have given Home Watson a 4 or 3, I forget. But there's 2 or 3 moments that made me audibly laugh, and it was all a physical comedy. It was like the Lauren Lapkus character or Missy falling off the cliff and like smashing off it. That made me laugh. I don't feel ashamed about that. But everything else in this movie, it's like you said, it's like this weird base level caveman comedy that like appeals to this group of people that I think they yearn for the old Happy Madison sort of days of comedy where, like, you know, you could see Adam Sandler on the screen do something slapstick and physical humor oriented, and, you know, everyone laugh at it and they yearn for that. And there's nothing wrong with that. But at the same time, there's no substance to this, especially when you do, like you said before, which is my main point in this whole movie, when you take a guy like David Spade and you make him the straight man and you don't let him be the asshole. Like, he's the good guy, nothing. Like, he had no personality, and it was just the vessel for this movie to, like, give you overboard Lauren Lapkus, which I don't think was a good choice because, first of all, it's nothing against her. Like, obviously, she's taking direction throughout this movie to be the character she's being. But, like, when you have him, he needs somebody to bounce off of, like, that. Like, and that's, like, the role, obviously, when you're doing a Happy Madison movie and you have these guys who love David Spade, they want to see him bouncing off a lovable oaf. They want to see him being an asshole, being the smart ass against that sort of character. I mean, you have him being the nothing character and her being just this overboard, obnoxious, like, again, not real character, no basis in reality, so fucking overboard. Like, there's just nothing to it. And it's just very, very, very frustrating to watch, especially just because nobody in this movie is relatable. It's like, it felt like, to me, watching it, and this is what I said in our text group, I said it felt like somebody ate, like a fucking sick animal ate Forgetting Sarah Marshall and shit it out, and then like that was this movie, and like that's what I came to the end of with this. But still, two or three laughs out of me, and that's enough to get it to a 5. And
I mean, she should have died when she fell off that cliff.
It made me laugh though.
The way it looked was absurd.
Don't get me wrong. I understand laughing at that. I love good physical humor, but that's not, man. You know when he falls down in Hot Rod and he tumbles down the mountain for like 90. But that movie's built on it is not real. Like it's stupid in pain, and it is over the top on purpose. It's essentially like in line with a parody. But this movie tries to be humanizing and real and like teach a lesson. So like to see that in this movie, it like doesn't like the process of how that happened doesn't work. She should have fucking died.
There's no lesson because Missy sucks at the start.
He still sucks.
Like it. You know, some of these movies, I guess you can kind of see, like, you know,
it wasn't
like,
fucking Shallow Hal. He didn't run away because she was like ugly or something. He ran away because she was fucking asshole.
She was sucked.
Like, that's why she ran away.
She basically sexually assaulted them on a plane.
Yeah.
But I mean, you said like Happy Madison. I think that's a fair comparison for the later era. And I don't know how to describe it because I do think back to the like original Happy Madison films of Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore. And I do think there was brilliance to those movies. I think there is a ludicrous brilliance to punching out Bob Barker on a golf course. And there's very funny things. Now, did they age the best? No, but like these movies just have this base level of humor that's, you know, based off of like either getting beaten up, getting physically intimidated, or being threatened with violence, or being sexually something weird done to you. The example of that, and it wasn't a joke, is when she's like, oh, you haven't met Sheila. And he's like, who's Sheila? And she just pulls out a big knife. She pulls out a large knife. That's not a joke.
She's my emotional support knife.
Yeah, which, emotional
what'd
support
say,
knife.
What do you say to it's an off support, or rather, not a really relevant point. But the fact that he said Crocodile Dundee weird. And I picked up on, I don't know if you guys did too. He said, what are you, Crocodile
Dundee?
Dundee? I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? You know what movies are.
So it's like
the opening scene rolls through. And sorry to interrupt, Jeff, but then
let me end on the humanizing angle one more time, because then I want to get to what you're saying, opening scene. I just want to go through the movie. Zach Galifianakis, The Hangover. Absurd character. Has humanizing moments. Happy Gilmore. That's another great example. But guess what? Here's the thing. Like, he gets human, right? He has a love interest. Like, there's enough there where he has, like, the ebbs and flows of the movie where he does calm down from being the Happy Gilmore, like, crazy hockey guy, right? And you can connect at least a little bit there to make it believable. And the movie's, again, built on absurdity. But this one, movie's not built on absurdity. The one character is. And just, it was just fucking shockingly bad. Let's go ahead, though. Let's go. Yeah. Why don't we go through the movie, like you said?
Yeah, so that scene ends. That's the opening scene. You know, he meets Melissa, right? And then it cuts to him at the office with Nick Schwartzen, who they said, hey, Nick, we need a guy to play the creepiest fuck guy you work with that somehow is in all these movies that makes sexually inappropriate jokes or weird things, weird comments at the office. And he's like, sure. So that happens. We get like a little bit of characterization behind David Spade's character and find out that he was cucked, basically. We're dealing with a guy who was cucked by his ex-fiance. And that's about as much as we get out of David Spade. And that there's going to be some stuff in Hawaii. So it was Hawaii, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he goes to the airport and he meets this universe's version of a manic pixie dream girl, which is like essentially like a very normal girl bro who is cool.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're reading a book? Yes, I'm also reading this David Patterson novel I got at Walden.
Or I'm also reading Alex Cross, right?
CNBC bookstore. Wow, you intellectual giant, you. And this was supposed to, so this will, this is what I'll say, is this were a subverted expectations of the movie. I thought that this Melissa, the right Melissa for right now, but yet the wrong Melissa later down the movie, I thought that this Melissa was supposed to be the one, because she was set up to be that like happy Madison, perfect female character. She just set everything right, and she was completely normal, and she was super chill and all that stuff. And so he gets her digits, and he ends up, they end up hooking up in a hotel. And sorry, he wasn't going to Hawaii just yet by that time. But anyway, am I missing anything there? So no. nothing fun. The long story short is nothing funny has happened in this span of time. He has simply just talked to Nick Schwartzen's character, who's made a lot of jokes around reading his emails, which I think is supposed to be funny, but it's not really funny because I feel like companies do that to begin with. So he's like, oh yeah, I read your emails. And the joke's supposed to be like, oh, what a creep, he's reading emails. And I'm just like, dude, probably are. Yeah. Don't send shit on your work email, you fucking idiot. That at all. So David Spade is about to bust that nut off in a supply closet. He gets into like a little text message.
In an airport supply closet, let's be clear about that. And if you open a door, you're not supposed to open an airport. You're getting shot to death. Like, and especially in the Atlanta airport, or if that's where they were, right? Fucking way.
Yeah, something like that. So then he gets a text message from Melissa, right? So he thinks it's airport Melissa. And the first thing that kind of lets him know that this should be wrong, but he goes along with it, is when he gets a text message that says, I want to see that dick, which he complies with. And he takes some dick pics, which goes back to Nick Schwartzen's character, who has seen his dick pics and is now commenting on them, just to kind of get this back together. That's the joke. And then we meet the villain of the movie, which is a woman careerist. David Spade's on the plane. And this gets into the worst scene of the movie. He's talking. Is it the guy from Lost that's next to him on the plane?
Yeah, it's Hugo.
That's the joke.
That's the joke. But I don't know if it's a funny joke, because my reaction was, it's a good joke. I didn't actually laugh. I was like, oh, okay. It's a reference. Like, that's a cool reference, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So sure. gets in the worst scene. He thinks he's going to Hawaii with the right Melissa. The bad Melissa shows up. The bad Missy shows up, and she's being
absolutely obnoxious. Like, not, you know, again, going back to just saying weird things.
Pulls
her knife out. Oh, gets her knife confiscated, buries her head in roses. David Spade, it turns out, okay, so this is where it gets kind of weird. She's about to kill herself, and then David Spade's character texts her. I don't know. I don't think that was a very sensitive representation of that particular subject matter, but I do think that was their attempt to, at least at the end, humanize it. But at the time, it's almost like that was play for laughs, which I didn't really like.
Yeah.
Where, like, she was literally about to jump. She gets a text and then, you know, better, and she shows up on the trip. Long story short, like, he wakes up, it's dark. She's staring at him, and she's just straight up cranking his hog off. Which what she calls it, like, what is it called? The Jergens jerky, or
yeah,
the nickname for it. She just
Jergens jerkfest.
Gives him this wink, just smiling at him. Like, and I think actually, like, the way she's acting this is pretty funny. But the weirdest part about it is he's just getting a regular old HJ, and then turbulence happens, and he nuts. He just throws some ropes under the blanket.
So, and fear.
Everyone around him knows he busted a nut. Everyone is privy to the fact that he just got hand jobbed. It's just a completely weird scene. The lady behind him says she's going to hell. The character from Lost hands him a magazine to wipe up his baby batter.
Yeah, which, like, please don't hand me a fucking glossy magazine to wipe up my cock with.
What's gloss going to do, man? It's just going to, what's that going to do? Make it worse.
It's gonna, like, rub. Well, imagine, like, the feeling of, like rubbing that on your dick. No, thank you, sir. And also, they said that she was jerking him off for 40 minutes.
Jesus. So the next, I'd say 20 minutes of the movie is more characterization on Missy showing you how awful she is. She shows up to the mixer at the Hawaii hotel, which, by the way, His ex-fiance and...
Oh, wait, hold on. I'm sorry. I have to stop you. Do not skip her doing that thing in the bathtub.
Oh, yeah.
That was the first moment for me. I was already mad, but I'm like, all right, maybe it'll turn. Maybe when she gets there, she's going to start to normal out. The Hellstar thing was just...
Wait, what do you think? Was that improv? Was that written in the script? Was it like, was some writer like, okay, you're going to do this character called Hellstar, and you're going to put rose petals over your eye, and you're going to use your hair as a mustache, and you're going to act like Satan. And everybody's just like sitting on the crew like, this is going to be funny as fuck.
Well, that was my thought. I'm like, are they laughing on set right now? Like, there's no way. There's no way.
They definitely, like, wrote in, like, have Lauren Lupkus do a bit, and then, like they didn't, like, quantify it or anything. We'll just improv it on set. Who cares? We'll figure it out. And they did not figure it out before they shot it. And they're just like, Hellstar, the mustachioed girl that eats rose petals. So good, right?
So they next 20 minutes, they go to lengths to characterize Missy a little more. She shows up at this mixer, is, you know, just acts like a complete buffoon. Embarrasses David Spade, jumps off a cliff. Then he has sex with her, right? This is where they have sex, but it's basically just like him passing out.
Fuck-facing.
Yeah, which was something that they thought was a lot funnier in concept.
Oh, yeah.
Execution, because they mentioned the whole fuck-facing thing 20 times. Anyway. So they go, okay, then here's the next part that's worth mentioning. This wouldn't be a Happy Madison movie if your boy didn't roll through. That's right. Oh, yeah. I'm talking about Rob Schneider and another one of his classic Rob Schneider characters.
Who's the 51st Dates dudes, except that he's just like, they didn't try to like paint his skin to a different color this time. That was literally the only difference between this and that character.
Yeah, just a boat captain, done, you know.
He was on the boat helping out David Spade's boss, a.k.a. Dollar Store Craig T. Nelson.
Yes.
Dollar Store Coach.
So, yeah, you know, Missy makes it on the boat. Some more physical comedy with her falling into the water. This was kind of the central set piece to the movie, I thought. It was the Shark Tank scene. Wasn't very funny, but we did get a good barf. Which, by the way, I fully expected Missy to have a shit scene. So the bar scene came close, but I figured she'd have diarrhea or something into a pool at some point. Like, that would be like her time to shine. But she barfs into the water and the sharks attack. And then
good barf, good looking barf. I'll give him that.
It's around this point in the movie that I don't think we yet have come to.
I don't know. Missy hasn't turned yet. We'll get to the scene where Missy kind of turns is when she shows up and does the hypnotherapy on his boss. Where, like, not a lot of time passes, but essentially, what was the shadow puppet thing, too? That was really weird. Like, that, did they think that was going to be funny?
I think they thought a lot of this was going to be funny.
My brain logged out on that.
I'm getting bored. Like, nope, I don't
not
know.
Not doing this one.
I don't know. See, I can't do this anymore, but what I will say is that happened. And then she basically hypnotizes his boss to like him by thinking he's his grandma. David Spade's character is his grandma. And then at about...
She did the Hellstar thing again before this, yeah, by the way. She did second Hellstar in the pool with Craig T. Nelson.
So after this big shadow puppet thing at about 103:45, you can kind of see it in the way she's acting. She's kind of a normal person now. She has become a normal person within one scene of the movie. She's having a normal conversation with her. She's talking about, you know, her tough childhood and all that. Like, she's acting relatively normal. And it's this point in the movie where I'm like, wait, David Spade's going to fall in love with this Missy.
Mm-hmm.
So I will give the 5 points of the movie were subverting my expectations here, but they changed her character like that. Like, she actually, credit to Lauren Lapkus for this, because she actually became somewhat charming near the end.
Dude, that's when she said the title of the movie, as our good, or what do you call it, Sulkin said, like his famous line from Family Guy, when they say the name of the movie in the movie, it's great. He's like, "What? You don't like me, David Spade? Well, would you bring the wrong Missy?" And I was like, ha. The title of the movie.
I did just remember what you meant about the shadow puppet, because I just scrubbed through as well. It was the big screen where they made things out of their bodies, which is like a fucking America's Got Talent skit.
The Blue Man Group bullshit.
Weird. And then they had his rival did a New Kids in the Block skit. It just
So then Missy talks his ex-fiance to have a three-way, but David Spade's more sexually interested in just dogging Missy out rather than his fiance leaves. His rival's there. Some stuff happens. Honestly, it's all bullshit at this point. He realizes when the good Missy shows up that he's in love with the bad Missy. And he chases after her. We return to the city where they lived. He does the whole date swap confusion at the bar. Oh, by the way, David Spade's acting ridiculous. Like, now the awful character traits of the wrong Missy have transmogrified onto David Spade himself. And I'm done. This is really stupid. There's not much here. I hate it. I hate this movie. It fucking pisses me off.
We can definitively say that she was actually the right Missy.
Also, who was the date?
The actress?
Who was the date at the end of the movie? Who was with the wrong Missy?
It was Vanilla Ice.
Because of course.
Which is the old
it was Vanilla Ice.
That to me is the ultimate Happy Madison joke.
Exactly.
That's the Sully joke from Grown Ups 2.
That it's was like, self-aware. Here's
somebody you know. And that was funny, but it's just like that. I did when used right, it can be funny, but like here's some like Vanilla Ice isn't famous enough for that joke to work. No,
I disagree because I think this is self-aware. I don't think they were doing this reference to be like, see, people still know Vanilla Ice. I think this was the final fuck you where it's like, yeah, this movie sucked. And you know what? Here's Vanilla Ice. And you're going to think that we're doing this seriously. But nope, you just watched this 1.5 hour movie so that we could go have our friend's vacation in Hawaii. Dickhead.
So the ultimate thesis on this is going back to the brilliance of Chris Farley, which – I think with the straight man, you're not supposed to root for the straight man always. You're supposed to be within both camps. But with Chris Farley, you always rooted for his bumbling idiot more than you rooted for David Spade's straight man. And you kind of hated a straight man act because, like, why are you so high and mighty? You're just a little twerp. But when you have a character that's obnoxious, like Missy in this one, you hate both of them. You think both of them are miserable, and you just have a bad time. And that's how I felt about this movie is I like David Spade, but he aside from his acerbic quips, he doesn't have much to bring to the table. And if you don't have the right person for him to be quippy with, it just it doesn't work.
They weren't
man.
Even good quips. Like, what's his best joke in the whole goddamn thing? It's like him saying, oh, you want anything else for your bath? A toaster? Huh. It's like, that's the best joke the best like retort you can give him. The guy is supposed to be like this, like you said, famously acerbic, like smart-ass character. It sucks.
I like his show, though. Like, I've watched it a few times. Like, I like the way he banters with other celebs. I think that people shit on David Spade a lot, I think they're my age, but I
there's a lot to like about David Spade, in my opinion. I like this movie's just not one of those things.
You got a nice trip to Hawaii, though.
He was on the show with Patrick Warburton. What was it called? Rules of Engagement? Yes. He was funny in that.
Yeah. He was on Spin City, right?
Yeah, that's right. Spin City, yeah.
Didn't he replace... did he replace somebody in Spin City?
Like no.
No.
That's only the character I know, or other actor I know from that show.
I don't remember.
This was nothing. We covered it in the beginning, too. It's just... It's not real. There's nothing. She's not a real enough character, and it's not her fault. And I will say that. I'm not saying this is Lauren Lucas's fault, but the character, the way this is written, is just, it's not believable. It's too absurd to fit the premise of the movie. This is not Hot Rod, right? Like, if that was a type of movie, maybe it does work. But she sticks out so much, and none of it is believable. There is no ability to suspend disbelief here. The second she shows up at that fucking cocktail party and acts like a douchebag, you're done.
Yeah.
She's gone.
It's not absurdist.
The rest of the movie
is based around a guy. Yeah, Hot Rod's based around a fucking guy that wants to like do a giant stunt to save his grandpa or his stepdad's heart from failing. Like, that's always going to be an absurd movie. This movie's supposed to be about like a mix up people have actually done in the past. I've done it a million times. Like, I understand it. And then like you get into this absurdist comedy, it just doesn't fit right.
Look at this.
And it's grounded. He's a grounded character in reality. The only other ridiculous character is the Nick Swardson perv.
Mm-hmm. Well, the boss is kind of a ridiculous character. What about the guy with the fucked up eyes?
Yeah, the other Happy Madison.
Yeah.
To the level of her of the wrong Missy.
No,
though?
No. Yeah. But hey, I know what you're saying. But the thing is, like, I'm on your side. I'm just saying, you throw other weirdos in here, like Rob Schneider. It's like this does not. You know what? Like the perfect execution.
But again, those are side characters. So.
Yes, that's true, and you're right. Like, but the perfect execution of like a character that you like a relationship where you feel bad for someone is Chandler and Janice. As I've been watching a bunch of Friends, because Janice is believable. Janice at least she's just very annoying. Whereas, like, she doesn't do all this crazy stuff that Missy does. So at least I can feel sorry for Chandler. With Missy, I would just be like, just leave, dude. Get a restraining order or something.
I'm just looking at the cast list now on Wikipedia. It just made me laugh because it says Vanilla Ice as Rob Van Winkle. They didn't say Vanilla Ice as himself. Vanilla Ice as Rob Van Winkle.
I still think it's funny his name is Van Winkle.
Right. I have a smart move switching to Vanilla Ice. Man, Bobby Lee, glad you got your vacation out of that, though. Great guy.
There's got to be some sort of financial arrangement between a particular resort and Happy Madison Productions. not an illegal one, but just like a discount on rooms. Like, there's got to be some sort of kickback for filming there. Not an illegal one, but just like a production credit.
Our good friend John Feidelberg liked this movie, by the way. I just wanted to know.
That's not surprising at all.
He said, I actually enjoyed it quite a bit, and I told him I hated it. He said it somehow worked for me, and I just texted him. We landed on our wrong Missy scores, 0-5-5. And I said, this is the most disappointed I've heard Trill talk about a movie since Holmes and Watson. And his reply was, come on.
what's to like about it? That would be a fun conversation with Fights, I guess.
I like had a couple of deep breaths during this movie because I'm like I don't know how I'm going to finish this movie. I don't know how I'm going to get through this. This is so – it's so bad. And like the ex-wife, the ex-fiance, what was even the point of that?
It's that poor Sour Chalk, man. Because he's like a good actress too.
It was supposed to get you to root for David Spade's character. You're supposed to feel bad he got cucked.
It only really like they kind of touch on it, right? It's like in little small spots where it's just kind of inconsequential. And then she tries to get in the three-way and you're like, what?
Well, that was the bootleg Sarah Marshall portion of it.
Exactly.
I was talking about.
Like, it is worse, Sarah, yeah.
That was supposed to make you feel bad for the guy, whereas you felt bad for him, but not like, I don't know, not a good way.
It's Happy Madison eating it and trying to barf it in your mouth like a mama bird. Being like, come on, eat it up. And even have the barf scene in this movie. Almost forgot it.
Audience gives it a 6. Average score for the wrong Missy, a point of 4. 4.
Sounds right to me.
this movie, yeah, this movie fucking, fucking Happy Madison takes a work trip vacation. The movie.
That's fine. Hey, they you look,
yeah, you know what? They're, fucking they're, power
they're
to them.
They're buttering their bread. They know how to do it. They
whatever,
know how to butter
man.
That English I, muffin. Just slap it on to make
this
that
fucking, this fucking movie,
Netflix,
man.
Netflix, some suit at Netflix is just like, God damn, I need more of those Happy Madison movies. I can't get enough. M. Sandler just sitting there like, oh, right. Fuck, you want this one? This one sucks.
Let's do that Sandler box office game, baby.
I did. Ready. I did Lovebirds, Nightcrawler. Oh, what a fucking movie. We got to do that whenever it's on a stream platform. And then I did The Wrong Missy after. Talk about a sandwich of movies. Holy shit. I mean, this was Jesus Christ. All right. The Wrong Missy. he just had to go to The Wrong Missy. All right. Adam Sandler box office game. Pull up the filmography. 6 through 10. Adam Sandler's number 6 through 10 highest grossing movies, because the top five are very obvious. It's three Hotel Transylvania movies and then Grown Ups 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
What damn. Do you guys throw in there?
I mean, I would have picked one of the Hotel Transylvanias. I'm going to be real with you.
I would have picked all three of them.
Yeah. I like The Wedding Singer.
Yeah. It's 98, man. I don't know.
I just feel like The Wedding Singer made a lot of money. I don't know why.
Let's do it. We got guesses.
The Wedding Singer is your guess. The Wedding Singer, I mean, not even in the fucking ballpark.
Fucking Christ, man. You really had me thinking that movie made a bunch of money.
My bad, dude. The Wedding, it just felt right, man. I'm hating me.
I think Click. I remember
Longest Yard, maybe.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. Longest Yard, I'll go with that.
Guys, this is the first. That's 17. Not even close.
What?
The Wedding Singer. The Wedding Singer was 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. It was 24. Oh,
17? God. How is the longest? That's bullshit, dude. That's bullshit.
We've never gone 0-2 to start.
That's bullshit. Well, Click's. I mean, Click's got to be.
I'm pretty confident
there.
About Click, man. That's what I said before. I'm pretty
Click,
confident. Yeah, about
Click
it.
Saved you. Click saved you. That's number six.
Okay.
You. This is it. You got. You're playing Sudden Death. I like. Okay. People were like, "You should throw a wrinkle in." Here's your wrinkle. They're on Sudden Death for the entire five.
I'm an idiot.
Let's not do anything post pre-90s just yet.
Okay. Let's see. I'm looking through the Filmo. That's what they call.
Nothing up. Punch Drunk Love. 50 First Dates. Big Daddy.
Big Daddy. Happy Gilmore.
I think 50 First Dates made good money. Let's just stay away from the 90s for a minute.
You doing Big Daddy? You doing 50 First Dates?
I think 50 First Dates made more money than Big Daddy.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's over. That's 11. You guys lost.
Oh my God.
That was terrible.
What in the world?
It's not easy, though, I will say. So Big Daddy is number pixels. Seven. Number pixels. Seven's Big Daddy. I 8 was Big Daddy. 6 is Pixels.
Oh.
Click is 7. 8 is Big Daddy.
Pixels were stupid.
Yeah, you probably
we're
should.
So stupid. That yeah. Was easy.
Longest yard was I had it shifted down. But still, I mean,
yeah. What was 9?
Pixels, Click, Big Daddy, Just Go With It. Oh. My vacation movie.
Bone yep. Me.
And then I don't think you would have gotten 10.
A Hot Chick, 8 Crazy Nights.
Nope.
Punch Drunk Love, Joe Dirt, Little Nicky. I'm just going down the list right now. Waterboy, Dirt.
Disney's Bedtime Stories.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely wouldn't have gotten that
would
one.
Would not. That's tough. This is a tough one. This was a tough one. That was easily my worst one.
Well, I think we were just too quick on the gun.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what David Spade's character was on the plane.
Exactly. Not really, though, it took him like 40 minutes. Of his well-known work, 8 Crazy Nights is the lowest.
It was like 13 million.
24 million. I will say most of his top 20 made $100 million or more, though. He's never made a movie over $530 million.
Guy makes dough and also makes good movies. Uncut Gems on Netflix. It's streaming, folks.
Shocking. I mean, well, all right. It's going to happen now and then. It happened now and then. All right. Favorite cereals. Top 10. So rattle off your 10 through 6 real quick. You can give a little, you know, a little word or two on each one. No problems there. because it's not an easy list to put together. Ken, Jack, myself, Trill, then the audience.
Okay, my number 10 is Apple Jacks, great milk after you're done. Honey Nut Cheerios is my number 9. Similarly, great milk when you're done, and also great crunch. Number 8, Honey Bunches of Oats, specifically pecan. Pecan Honey Bunches of Oats, so, so good. My number 7, Cocoa Puffs. My number 6, Reese's Puffs. Love the two puffs. Big fan of both. Love their milk.
Honey Bunches of Oats, almond, you said?
No, pecan.
Pecan. Okay, pecan. Cocoa Puffs. Then Reese's.
Jeff, how do you say it? Do you say pecan or pecan?
I say pecan pie, but pecan.
Yeah, that's what I do.
What?
What pecan? He just said.
You said pecan pie?
No, I say pecan pie. I say pecan pie.
Pecan pie, pecan. Okay. Well,
I'll say pecan if it's singular, but then pecans if it's plural. Yeah, I guess.
Oh, I bet that was the poppiest section we've ever recorded in this podcast.
Yeah, I love pop filter.
Pecan podcast. Pecan pie.
What was after Apple Jacks for you?
Honey Nut Cheerios.
I had a fucking typo fest. Okay, Honey Nut Cheerios. Okay. All right. That's a solid top 10. Apple Jack's not in my top 10, but they were bumped last second. Number 10 is a nostalgia play because it's not good anymore. They changed the recipe. It's ass. Count Chocula. It's not good anymore.
I haven't had it in so long.
Yeah, no. I don't even remember what they're shaped like.
Little wafer chocolate and then the marshmallows. It's just wafers are so bad now. Raisin Bran Crunch at number 9. Raisin Bran Crunch, delicious. We talked about the other day. Haven't had it in a while. Special K with berries at number 8. Love a good bowl of Special K with berries. They really got the dried berries. Delicious. The chocolate one's good too, but not top 10. Fruity Pebbles with marshmallows, number 7. That's a mixtape classic. The Coley and Tyler really put that one on the scene.
So dense.
Amazing. Delicious. And then Cinnamon Toast Crunch at 6. I'm a big CTC fan, but it's not my top 5. That's my 10 through 6.
I got Special K with berries, Corn Chex, Raisin Bran, Frosted Cheerios, and then Golden Crisp.
I like that pick.
Shout out to the GC Bear.
That motherfucker.
Don't dunk on you with the Golden Crisp.
Wait, what's your Honey Nut Cheerios? Is your 7?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, no, Frosted Cheerios. Sorry.
Frosted.
I like Frosted Cheerios. There's something different about the frosting they use on Frosted Cheerios.
You remember when they came out, it was like they were like Millenniumos or Millennios, right? Like yeah. Frosted Cheerios were super 2000s based.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They said it was like a decade thing.
Yeah.
Their turn of the century, whatever.
What innovation?
Frosting
on Cheerios.
Frosted.
Now, is there any discrepancy between base cereal and upgrade cereal than the Honey Nut or Frosted Cheerios and the regular Cheerios?
Yes.
That I can't eat regular Cheerios. I hate it.
No, they're trash. And like people are trying to say like, oh, put sugar on them, put honey on them, whatever. Like, no, just buy Honey Nut Cheerios.
Yeah.
Asshole.
Just get good Cheerios, dude.
Get the good Cheerios. Oh, you ever have Fruity Cheerios where they're just Fruit Loops, but they're Cheerios?
And you see, so it's like a healthy source of reducing cholesterol. And you're like, you've said that in your box for 15 years. I don't believe you. I don't get
this. Was the basis of the discussion on Sunday.
Yes, I don't understand it. I'm just reusing material. It's like seeing me on tour.
10 through 9 for the audience. Cocoa Pebbles, number 10. Life cereal at number 9.
What does a Life taste like?
All right. Okay. Life isn't bad. It's definitely not a top 10 cereal for me, but I enjoyed Life whenever my mom would buy it.
You guys like Kix?
No.
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 They got Kix? Kix is Cheerios. Kix doesn't taste like anything, does it?
No, it's just tasteless. This tasteless wheat puff.
I think a Life cereal is good though. Aren't they like, isn't like Life kind of like cinnamony?
Yeah, it's like
there
cinnamon.
Is a cinnamon. I think there's a cinnamon Life.
Oh, do you know but what I left off?
Maybe that's the one I've had. I don't know.
Oh, I got
to. There's a regular, I think. Okay, well, I'll have to double check. I don't be wrong on that.
Hey, no, I got to bump off one on my list, Jeff. I got to amend it. I got to get rid of Special K with berries, and I got to put the, you know, the little toasted Quaker squares.
Oh, I feel like that's cheating.
What?
I know what you're talking about, but yes.
The Toasted Quaker cereal. Toasted Quaker Square cereal. It's very good.
What?
Is it Toasted Quaker Oats? No.
Yeah, Toasted Quaker cereal.
Toasted Quaker Oats.
I know what you're talking about. I can visualize it in my head. I just don't know what it was called.
Toasted oatmeal?
Yeah, I think that was it. Toasted oatmeal.
No, just toasted oats.
Oatmeal squares. It's oatmeal squares. Quaker oatmeal squares. Brown sugar.
Oh, that was so
good. You know what I'm talking about?
That's a great
fisting cereal. So just we get a fist
yep
cereal and
way out the door.
It's not the way. That's just their better way to say that.
Get a dry somehow. Fist.
It's
no
a fisting.
Lube.
It's a fisting cereal.
Number 10.
Pinching cereals and fisting cereals.
Audience
cereal.
Cocoa Pebbles, Life, Frosted Flakes at 8. Ooh. Apple Jacks at 7. And then Captain Crunch, regular Captain Crunch at 6.
Man, it makes me too thirsty.
Captain Crunch cereal milk is elite, but Captain Crunch, I hate having to bite into it. I hate the roof shredding. I don't like that experience. And like, I don't know. There's just better sugary cereals.
Sheldon Cooper was a big cereal guy.
Fuck off. Ken Jack, number 5.
Number 5. HBO Max. Fruity Pebbles, baby. Shout out to the mixtape gang. Fruity Pebbles, just fucking absolute class. You beg your parents for it every single time you're in the cereal aisle. And it's for a reason.
It's not real cereal. It's candy. It's candy.
Yeah.
Well, it's dense. I like a cereal you pack it into a spoon.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a good fisting cereal, though, because it falls through your knuckles and stuff.
It's great because it's like when you put spinach on a hot like pan and it'll sit, like, just go straight down, like mm-hmm. a giant fistful of spinach and just sinks. It's like that with the Fruity Pebbles. So it just sinks into your cereal. Yeah.
Trill, do you remember the big cereal they used to sell?
The Big G?
They came in cans.
Yeah, I feel like I do.
Snackums.
Good name.
It was just enlarged versions of cereal, and you would eat it dry. I just sent it to you. And like Fruit Loops is one of them. Fruit Loops is my number 5. Fruit Loops, very good in regular milk, but also dry as well. Fruit Loops are a good dry cereal.
The Fruit Loop cereal bar. I used to love that.
Yes.
Very, very good.
Fruit Loops for me, number 5.
Such condensed milk in between them in the sandwich. They were delicious.
Yeah, I don't know what it was, but I think I know what you're talking about.
Elite lunch snack.
Trill, 5.
5 for this, guys, is a nice bowl of Honey Nut Cheerios.
Mm-hmm.
It's gluten-free, which is a plus. but you get the perfect milk ratio in a bowl of Honey Nut Cheerios, and you get it where like half of it's crispy and half of it's soggy. It's very good. I like it. And it's also a good fisting cereal.
Mm-hmm.
You get a big fist of Honey Nut Cheerios, and then you just kind of put the fist up to your mouth and just go, just
fist those O's.
Actually, you know who was in the original Frosted Cheerios commercial now that I remember it? It was Melissa Joan Hart, Gilbert Gottfried, Wayne Knight, and Rob Schneider.
Sounds about right.
All-star cast, Frosted Cheerios. No expense was spared in 1999.
Well, mm-hmm. It was 96 they actually launched it, but 99 they made a big millennium play on it. 96. Millennials.
Schneider coming straight off Judge Dredd. Had to get that
years.
Off.
25 years of Frosted Cheerios.
Audience, Honey Bunches of Oats at number 5.
I like that. Good commercial, good wholesome commercial. Good family town, entire town centered around the production of one cereal. I believe that.
That and Raisin Bran are the two best fake healthy cereals there are.
Ken Jack, yeah. Number 4.
4 is Frosted Cheerios. We already said all we had to say on them.
Yeah, Frosted Cheerios. My number 4, Reese's Puffs.
Reese's Puffs, yeah!
That's a dessert cereal. That is... Mm-hmm. My second favorite chocolate cereal. That's a hint. There's one more to come. But, Reese's Puffs. And always a fantastic ratio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Chocolate to peanut butter. Trill, number 4.
My 4 is Cocoa Puffs. Cocoa Puffs is the best chocolate cereal. Full stop. Just the best. It's the balls are really easy to eat.
Good cereal milk.
Mm-hmm. Great cereal milk.
There was an elusive Cocoa Puffs box that I never got. And on the back of it, you would cut out part of the box, and it would flip down, and the Cocoa Puffs would roll down the track into your
what? Bowl. Wow!
So, I remember I mailed away for a Captain Crunch game once, and it was like the Crunch Berries something home. I got it for my PC. I remember playing it on my parents' compact. It was so bad, but I never stopped playing it. It was like an addiction for me as a little kid. It was Captain Crunch Crunchling Adventure on the PC.
Hell so yeah. All
20 people that know that reference.
Did you say Crunchling Adventure?
Yeah. So it was like, the Crunchlings.
Oh, they're like humanoid crunches.
Yeah, they're horrifying.
Anthropomorphic crunches.
I'll send a picture in the chat. They are horrifying to look at. Horrifying.
Oh, my God.
And you got to customize your Crunchling, and like you would have to give it food. And guess what? It only eats Captain Crunch, so... Oh, that's great.
Captain Crunch doesn't want to be there right now. You can tell.
Mm-hmm. Audience Honey Nut Cheerios number 4. Ken Jack number three. Excuse me.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I think it's the best milk in the game when it comes to when you're done with the cereal. It is so fucking tasty, so sugary, so delicious. And like, I think when I can't eat one bowl of Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I always eat two. I can't help myself. I just get that endorphin rush going. Need the second bowl.
CTC is a very addicting cereal. I hate it's not my top five, but it just misses the mark. It just misses the mark. And now my chocolatey cereal at number 3. You ever have Crave?
Yeah, with the chocolate in the middle.
Crave is a polish off the box cereal.
Oh yeah.
Every now and then, that would be a really bad thing for me when I worked late nights at MLB. My first job, moved to Hoboken, and I come back at like 3:30 in the morning, and I'd be like, I haven't eaten in hours because I didn't have time to eat. And I go down to the bodega and I get a box of Crave, the regular wafers with like the chocolate in the middle. And I'd be like, all right, 2 or 3 bowls of the entire box. Mm. And the whole fucking thing. Crave, perfectly named.
Didn't have a weird spelling too? Isn't it like 2 V's?
K-R-A-V-E.
K-R-A-V-E.
Oh, that's right, yeah. I like that. That's classy.
Hell yeah. Number 3 for you, Trill.
Number 3 for this guy. It's a good old bowl of Cinnamon Toast Crunch, a.k.a. the premium tier in a continental breakfast.
Yes.
And whenever you get a continental breakfast with one of the spinny things, the spinny cereal droppers, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, I love that. I think Cinnamon Toast Crunch has the best, when it's been sitting in a milk, best milk absorption, consistency, texture, whatever you want to call that. I like when they're kind of soggy, not overly soggy. Not a great fisting cereal though, because you get the powder all over your hands. You gotta wash your hands after fisting them.
Audience number 3 is a shocking one. This is a bad cereal. It's a cereal that I liked as a kid and did not age well.
Cornflakes?
Cookie Crisp.
I did. Yeah, I would invite you to go have Cookie Crisp and as an adult.
It's not there anymore.
The novelty. Good.
It's not good. I'm eating cookies at breakfast. Fuck you, Mom.
The problem is it's not like cookie. Chips Ahoy did one, and they did the same thing. You got to have the chips in the cookie. It's little chocolate flakes in the top. This doesn't work. 2, Ken Jack.
My number 2 is Raisin Bran Crunch. Raisin Bran Crunch is absolutely unbelievably good. People try and think Raisin Bran's like an old lady cereal or something. It's not. Raisin Bran's delicious. There's just as much sugar in that as there is in like a Cinnamon Toast Crunch. It's such a great cereal to me. And also, milk is not as great, but I just love that. I love the crunch so much. The consistency of Raisin Bran Crunch is just amazing.
It's good, man.
It's a good pick. That's why I had it. Oh, fuck. Why am I yawning?
Jesus We're on a marathon podcast right now.
Not really. We're under 2 hours.
It feels like a marathon.
Number 2 for me, the controversial pick we've all been waiting for.
What is it?
Expensive. It's the most expensive fucking cereal you can buy.
I remember talking about this the other night.
What it's Crispix. Is it? Mm. One side Rice Chex, one side Corn Chex. It's got a great pop on the tongue.
Put sugar in your Crispix?
I don't, which is some people do if we put berries. It stays crunchy for a while, and I love that. It's good. Cold milk and Crispix, the way it runs through those little like the checkerboard
holes, the vents.
Yeah, I love Crispix, but boy, it is. There was a grocery store in the city I saw for $9.50.
Get the fuck.
That is insane. It's so expensive
because they have to fuse the corn and.
They're also taller. Crispix is the tallest cereal box.
Who sells it? Is it Kellogg's deal or is it General Mills deal?
It's Kellogg's, right?
Yeah, Crispix, I believe, is Kellogg's. Now you're making me question because I haven't bought it. My local grocer stopped selling it.
Pretty sure
it's Kellogg's. Yeah, it's Kellogg's. Yeah. So Crispix I always think it's Crisp X, but it's really Crispix.
I gotta say these Jersey Mike Crispix commercials Glover. Are good as hell. Jersey Mike commercials.
Jersey Mike's. When I worked retail, like we talked about earlier, there was a Jersey Mike's next door to the Golfsmith in Austin in the Arboretum, and they used to sell. They sold like chopped up grilled chicken sandwiches. Oh my god, to die for! And then I went to Jersey Mike's like out of Austin. And I couldn't find it anymore. Penn State does have it, though. But I couldn't find that hot sub. But I love getting something Mike's way.
Oh, yeah. Get the vinegar and oil on it.
Never went to a Jersey Mike's.
You're missing out, friend. It's my favorite chain sandwich.
Chain sandwich? Hmm.
Chain sandwich.
I'm in Jersey, so I may as well try it. So you can find it somewhere.
Hey, it's me. I'm Mike. Come to my sandwich shop. You can have it Mike's way if you want.
I know Mike. I know Mike. Can I get a discount?
I'll give it to you Mike's way. We need you want a Mike's way. Yeah, forget about it. It's Fruity Pebbles is my number two. I like Fruity Pebbles.
Yep.
I don't buy them anymore. I rarely treat myself to Fruity Pebbles. I don't know why. Just because I can't eat them out of the box that easily. It's hard to grab them with a fist.
True.
Yes, you fist the cereal. Yes.
Wait, milk or cereal first, Drew?
It's the cereal first. Who puts milk? Nobody puts milk first. Nobody.
I'm just making sure.
The only time people do that is when they forget.
They want attention. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is an intention thing. But I remember a friend once told me did it.
Yeah, I'm wacky, guys.
Smash that fart button.
Is there any lazier moment?
I put my drink in before the ice.
Is there any lazier moment when you put the drink in the cup and you haven't done the ice and you're like, well, I could dump out this water and refill it after the ice, or I could put the ice in with the machine and have it splash all over the floor. Oh, and then proceed to.
My roommate went to go she puts in the glass right into the ice tray. And I'm like, dude, you watch Bar Rescue once? Like, you don't dip the glass right into the ice tray. You chip off the ice into the glass into the ice tray, and then someone's drinking ice or drinking a glass. You don't want that.
Yeah. Yeah. Number one. Number two for the audience is Frosted Mini Wheats.
I love Frosted Mini Wheats, but, like, I don't know.
Sometimes too much. Very good, but sometimes it's like, hey, these are too much going on here.
I like when you get the one with the whole bunch of frosting on it. I'm sure that's not a unique thought.
You, what a hot take. You like the ones with the more
extra
sugar.
I like the sugar ones.
Number one, Ken Jack.
That's Frosted Flakes. Frosted Flakes, best milk. Frosted Flakes has the best milk. Probably second best milk, only Cinnamon Toast Crunch. And it is such a great cereal. It's just so tasty. And
it's the best dry cereal, in my opinion.
Yeah, like that's when you can fist, like you were saying, Trill. You know, you're hungry, but you don't want to make a whole meal. You just eat a fist of it. It's fine. It's not a big deal. You can soak it a little bit, and it's not going to lose too much of the crispiness to it. And I love that. And it's another cereal like Cinnamon Toast Crunch where I need to have two bowls. I can't help myself.
Sometimes you just got to soak it.
Yeah, let's soak for a little bit. See how it feels. Maybe just jostle around a little bit. Make sure everything stays hard. I mean, yeah, so cereal, anyway, is really good.
Can I get to know what it feels like?
I'm gonna crunchitize me, Captain, with my number one, Captain Crunch Crunch Berries. I can a dangerous cereal that I could polish off in a heartbeat. I do agree, though. Makes you thirsty, right? Makes your mouth dry.
Why? I don't understand it.
It's weird, man. Those things stay. Well, I think Captain Crunch Crunch Berries stays. You could let that sit in the milk for like 10 minutes, and that shit is not gonna get soggy. But I love Crunch Berries. I love the clash of flavors. So complex. Captain Crunch Crunch Berries is delicious. My number one. Trill, number one.
Number one for me is Frosted Flakes.
Wow. I don't even get two of them.
Mm-hmm. I think Frosted Flakes are perfect. It's a perfect cereal. And Tony the Tiger.
How about here?
I like that Frosted cartoon Flakes where he's cooking up crack.
Have you seen the Frosted Flakes with marshmallows and the Frosted Flakes with Fruit Loops?
I have. But that's, look. I'm afraid, man. I'm afraid what's going to happen to me if I go down that route.
Oh, Frosted Flakes with Lucky Charms. Come on.
Is that something out of the box?
Yeah.
Because General Mills is Lucky Charms, and then Frosted Flakes is Kellogg's.
No. Lucky Charms, Frosted Flakes. I've seen it in the store. It's a real thing. And then there's the Frosted Flakes and Fruit Loops mashup. There's Honey Nut Frosted Flakes, and then there's Frosted Flakes with marshmallows.
I mean, just the marshmallows are the best part of Lucky Charms, and no one denies. I'm glad Lucky Charms didn't make any of our list, right? I'm just make sure I'm not forgetting.
Maybe Frosted Flakes is General Mills. Maybe I got that wrong.
No, it's
no, Frosted Flakes is General Mills, isn't it?
Frosted Flakes is Kellogg's, but I know they had a crossover. It's crazy. Here, I'm going to send it to you. But they had one.
Is the name Frosted Flakes? Is that like trademarked and copywritten?
It's
trademarked.
It's their logo, though. That's the Frosted Flakes logo. No, on it.
I don't
it's
know.
Similar
don't
to
see,
it.
You don't
maybe,
see the tiger. This looks like they got away with a little. They were a little cheeky. Mm-hmm. Got away with a little cheeky.
And then you could do the spooky Frosted Flakes, which were chocolate Frosted Flakes with marshmallows. And then they also had, if you want to feel like a real athlete, you could do Frosted Flakes with energy clusters.
I don't like that.
That's just doing too much. How about pumpkin spice Frosted Flakes?
No, fuck that. You're getting too crazy. It's just, you got to stick with the regular.
I agree.
Although, I might like the Lucky Charms one because, again, the Lucky Charms, the regular cereal parts of it, just suck ass so bad. They're so gross. But maybe including Frosted Flakes. Now I'm in.
Oh, cocoa, hot cocoa puffs, very good. The cocoa puffs with marshmallows, delicious.
Mm.
All right, that's it. There's another fucking cereal that I, there's a gimmicky cereal that I forgot. Now I'm mad. Gimmicky cereal. I'm not going to get it in time. We gotta go. Anything else?
No, that's it. That was a good episode. I enjoyed watching that piece of shit movie.
I fucking hate that movie so much.
It sucked. It sucked ass.
What a bag of ass.
Big trash.
I'm going to be on the radio tomorrow. Or the internet radio, right, Jeff?
Yeah.
Not really the radio, just a live show. And it's going to be also, it's a growing show. I'm very excited about it. It's going to be on YouTube and BarstoolSports.com afterwards, but it's going to be live as well, 11 a.m. Eastern. You're doing trivia with Ken Jack and our good friend Donnie up against PFT and Brandon. Brandon Walker has no idea who Trill Ballins is. He's going to be incredibly angry. He will accuse you of cheating if you get it right because he's not going to see your face. He's going to assume that you're on somewhere Googling. If you win tomorrow, he's going to be furious. And I already told him that.
What if I just make loud typing sounds?
Yeah, you should. You should.
You should do, on the first question. All right, it's established here on the first question. And I'm going to tell PFT so PFT knows. Trill's going to make loud typing sounds.
No, and we should all does. Let's all act like we don't hear it. Like let's tell PFT not to react. I won't react. You don't react, Jeff, and be like, we don't know what you're talking. What are you talking about, Brendan?
I don't know. Maybe not for my first appearance.
Okay, maybe the second one.
Yeah, maybe we'll do it in the second.
I think you're going to do really well. I actually had to already edit a question tonight because one of the questions was a Mike's Way question. So I had to take a question. That's the problem. Writing questions for Trill is tough, and even Kendrick because he's on this show, like. The stuff that I write for the dozen is usually shit. When we run with a big if true, is shit that we talk about, and it's shit that I know we've talked about before. That's why I read a lot of it off the top of my head. So it's shit that you guys know. So I've had to be really careful with writing for tomorrow. I'm not even done yet. I wouldn't be up all night doing it because I gotta make sure I don't give you guys too many softballs and get accused of playing favorites. So,
I think we're gonna win, Trill.
Also, live. Thursday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, the fictional basketball debates. Do not miss that.
Oh, I can't wait. It's going to be so
Do fun. Not miss that. It's the funniest thing I've ever been involved in.
I like doing it.
Drill, you're making your team, I believe, tonight.
Yeah. I'm going to try to have them done tonight.
It's all right.
All right.
Take your time with the good idea.
I finished mine, and Nick said it killed him. So I think I'm in good shape right now.
Okay, good.
I have audibly laughed at basically every single team so far, and the delivery on a couple is going to make them even fun. I'm excited, and we have we have surprises. That's all I'm gonna say. That's it. I don't know what we're gonna review on Sunday. We'll figure it out. Probably we'll do a good movie. Maybe we'll dip to HBO Max. We might do HBO Max. But we'll do a good movie. We'll figure it out in the next day or two.
Again, HBO Max sounds like a guy named Max reviews HBO movies. Yes. We have to pick something else.
Lights, camera, Jackson. For Ken, Jack, and Trill, I'm Jeff Lowe. We'll talk to you next time.